hits his first home run of the year to put the Twins up 4-3.
Just trying to grind through it, you know. Every win isn't going to be pretty, and, you know, to go 13-9 and come out on top is a good thing. It's funny, I was trying to drive something the other way, and he left the fastball up and in, and I just reacted to it. So glad I put a good swing on it, and I'm glad we're going to Chicago.
It's amazing what this long without a home run, even more amazing, six games over 500 for your Twins. They'd be in the postseason were it to begin, but we were just talking off the air before we started, who won't they have in the postseason, who they won't have for another 20-something-odd games? 30-odd games, but they'll have him for 82 games. Irvin Santana can pitch in 82 games after his 80-game suspension is up, but he cannot pitch in, let's say there's a 163rd game, that extra game, can't pitch in that, cannot pitch in the postseason. There is a provision that was added to the joint drug agreement in 2014, and I mean, it's a section 7H2, page 41, blah, blah. Any player suspended for performance-enhancing drugs, quote, shall be barred from participating in the postseason, including, without limitation, being in uniform during the club's postseason, during the season in which his suspension commenced after the completion of his suspension. There's no loophole in that one. It's pretty cut and dry.
That thing's probably airtight.
Yes, it sounds very airtight. He can't participate, as I said, in any tiebreaker games in this season. And they, on the cusp, well, they have to keep it going, but right now, if something happened to cancel the season, they'd be going to the postseason.
Boom.
Well, it's unbelievable.
Well, what about, is that a good rule? It's like, I don't think it makes too much sense to me.
I don't agree either for this reason. You've already served your 80 games.
Yeah.
And that should be the end of it. I mean, it's basically, okay, you're being penalized. Come on and play. Oh, get out of uniform. Your team's in the postseason. You're going to be penalized again.
Like, if they wanted to use the postseason as part of any of this suspension at all, wouldn't you just say if you're suspended with 40 games left in the year and you have a 50-game suspension?
Count that as part of
it. The 10 games, don't count it as part of the postseason. You can't play. And then 10 more games for the following season. So it still penalizes them postseason-wise as well.
Clearly what they're trying to do is make it a much stronger deterrent so that players know, okay, you're going to be gone for these 80 games or 50 games or whatever the number is, but you are going to miss the postseason too, because that's a real penalty on your team. What if he did come back in those final 82 games, and because of him, they go powering into the postseason? They just won't have him. Although, you know, you could do so much with makeup these days and fake beards and glasses. They just come up with some guy. No. You're wrong. Alex Meyer isn't 6'10". Look at him. He's not that big. He's, you know, and yes, he also has, you know, a darker complexion than you thought. You just come up with some obscure guy in the minors and say that's him. That wouldn't get him in any trouble, would it?
No, not at all.
No.
Pull the old Bobby Valentine when he got kicked out of the game the one time.
He did basically that, didn't he?
Like a fake mustache and a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, some of them will try just about anything. Just a quick aside, you know, because I've made no secret that we've shown horses, and horses have to be a certain height, and, you know, and sometimes there's height restrictions. There are with, you know, ponies and minis. People have actually tried, like for a miniature horse, it's the last hair of the mane, which is, you know, that's the long thing that goes on the side of the horse, but people have tried having either surgery or taping it on. Look, people do anything to cheat is the bottom line and the point of it. And I'm not mentioning that because we're going to talk about the New England Patriots at the moment. Not even have anything at all to do with that.
No.
But it's just interesting though that, and this, I don't recall this coming out at the outset, do you? You know, when he was first, when he first was suspended, I don't remember this part about the no postseason play.
No.
Being included.
Nobody said anything at all about it.
No, as a matter of fact, the first we've heard, I think, was Mike Berardino's story.
Yeah, and he wrote that today or last night or something.
Yeah, I think it appeared in today's, and he did write it for last night.
I don't think he would have written that story if it was common knowledge and it had already been reported on several times.
No, so, I mean, many people, not a matter of dropping the ball, but it's been there, but a lot of people, you know, no one asked about it, nobody looked into it. And obviously, the Twins were, hey, by the way, when he comes back, well, he'll only be here for 82 games if we make the postseason. But then again, when he was suspended, whoever thought the postseason was even a possibility?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, once he went down, I thought a lot, or I think a lot of people thought the Twins ship is going down with him.
But also, think about this. The fact that Joe Mauer just hit a home run, his first home run of the season. Yes. And they're still six games above 500 because he is, I know he's not a home run hitter, but he's such a, he's a big part of this team. And they're doing things without him being the a star on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have guys, when they need a hit, that they're getting hits from guys. Things are working.
Yeah, Joe Mauer hasn't been the typical first baseman that you see, if stat line wise.
He'll never be that.
He's hitting around 285. He's hit his first home run. He's still driving in 20 plus runs at this moment, which is not bad. But there they are, six games up.
24 ribbies for him, 24 for Torii Hunter. Torii Hunter really has had a huge impact on this team, in on the field and off of it.
Definitely.
And I mean, it's, you cannot underestimate the value he has had to this team. And how, and even now he didn't have one yesterday, but Danny Santana batting .243, .264 on base percentage. He's getting your occasional walk in there.
Attaboy.
Attaboy is right. He led off 1 for 6. Dozier 0 for 5 last night. We're talking, of course, they were in Pittsburgh for the latest win. They're now 23-17. Somebody said they're on a pace to win more than 90 games. That's staggering.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it, with Torii Hunter having such an impact on this team, I think he's just brought an element of fun to the clubhouse.
Yes.
So everybody's out there having fun, they're enjoying the game, as opposed to, all right, here we go, and pressing at the plate, striking out, great stuff that we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
You know what the shame of it is? That they didn't realize this when they had him in the first place. And just, instead of, you know, letting him get away and get out of there, they should have done, you know, he should have been with them all along. But anyway, they didn't quite, didn't work that way, so.
They offered him 4 years, 60, if my mind serves me correct, and he took a 5-year, 80 with Anaheim. So
well,
they did
that's
offer
hard to,
him a decent.
Yeah, but he got him a lot more from Anaheim.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was talking about the money.
So they at least tried to keep him around, and.
They did. They at least made the attempt to do something about keeping him around. Now there's I don't know, saw the Ray Rice story.
Yeah,
all charges were dropped. The domestic violence charges dropped. He went through, you know, he was put in that intervention program. This is of course Ray Rice, who knocked out his wife, knocked her unconscious in an elevator in Atlantic City, and he's now, I mean, it's still on his record, but he'll not be, you know, the charges have been dropped, but it's not like everything's been, nothing's going to be wiped clean anyone. Everyone remembers what happened. So he did the pretrial intervention.
Charges and everything have been dropped, but he's still kind of being penalized by the league because
no one's going to sign him. No one would sign him. And frankly, he was on the downside of his career when this was happening anyway.
Well, actually, we shouldn't say nobody. Because there's a team that drafted problem child, so to speak, Randy Gregory, and they signed Greg Hardy, and they don't have a running back.
Oh, my goodness. So what you're suggesting, the Cowboys might do something like that.
They're really pulling some kind of the longest yard type of
team right now. You know what? You just made a point that is could be a great point. Maybe what they've done is this. By getting Hardy and Gregory, it softens it when they bring him in. Well, it just, you know. They got Hardy. Hardy is, you know, it looks just as bad as Rice did.
Jerry Jones can come out and just say to the fans, what did you expect? What did you think we were doing?
Hey, we want to win. And also say, look, they paid their dues. Mr. Rice's charges were dropped. Can't say it never happened. We all saw that it did. And that wasn't Photoshopped, what he wound up doing. We're also going to, we'll talk in our next segment to the chief, David Alcaro. I got to ask him about did you hear the stuff about the owner of American Pharoah?
This thing
he's embroiled in. He's seeking, well, there's a lawsuit against him that some guy claims he owes him $1.65 million. According to the guy, Howard Rubinsky, he lent Ahmed Zayat, who owns American Faro, who's won both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, claims he owes him the $1.65 million to front him gambling money for on offshore betting. So I'm sure the chief is out there, and he's been following this. We'll get a little more information there. This, to me, is just the typical Jersey thing. The guy lives in Jersey. Came over, young man when he was 16, over from Egypt. Started a business, got things going. It's a great American story. And then this monkey wrench gets thrown into it with the, when you start talking about him having a lawsuit. Trying to get it dismissed, though. He says it's all a lie. He doesn't know the guy. He claims it's a fraud. It's a scam from A to Z. Total fiction, a total lie. Well, that's, I guess, why they have the court case to figure such things out. But we have a terrific lineup for you today. You know it, right? Have you looked who we got coming in?
I think I know.
Well, Jack Jablonski's going to join us. He'll be coming in. Actually, he'll be with us for the duration. He'll be coming in any moment. We're going to have Ken Herbeck. Ken Herbeck back in 1987 after the Twins won their first World Series, 7-game World Series. He went on the Letterman Show, which ended last night. We'll talk to Ken about what he remembers from that, and also, the Twins, how well they're doing. He's always been a Twins fan and will always remain one. We'll talk to Tom Whaley, the Saints executive VP. They opened the season today at the new field. A lot of excitement about that. I want to ask him about Pablo Pig Asso, their pig. Jim Suhan, of course, from the Star Tribune. We'll talk to Jim about your Twins also. Rick Haro, nobody knows the business of sports like it's nobody's business, but Rick. No, Rick knows as much as there is to talk about it. And we'll talk to the chief and Jack when he joins us about the NHL. You see that score last night with the Rangers?
I am shocked at what's happening in that series right now. Not the fact that Tampa Bay's up, just how much scoring has been
Lundqvist
going on.
Well, isn't giving up like 6 goals in the last 2 games?
Yeah.
At least that. So that's a bit of a high-scoring affair.
Yeah, Lundqvist and Bishop both had really good semifinals for their conference matchups. And then they come in, and it's just...
You're seeing
that light flash on so many times.
Well,
it's kind of fun.
It is. It's like they're playing a pinball game instead of a hockey game. And last night's game, 6-5, went to OT. Tampa Bay wound up beating the Rangers. And Tampa Bay's got the 2-1 lead there. That's a pretty darn good team. And they got, we talked about Chicago, about those guys being young.
Mm-hmm.
This Tampa line, they've got guys 24, 21, 21. They have some of the best players in hockey, too. And they're young.
Yeah.
So that's going to be, it may not be as tantalizing if you wound up with a Tampa Bay-Anaheim series, but that would be a hell of a series.
It'd still be pretty interesting. It takes away a little bit from being up here in the north, and you're seeing California team, Florida team go at it for the Stanley Cup Finals, but still, Stamkos is a hell of a player. Tyler Johnson has been terrific playoff series after series.
Well, obviously, it's one. You can't count out Chicago at all.
Not after what they did the other
No.
The other night.
And now they're in Chicago. Tonight's game, they're tied 1-1. Anaheim winds up going to Chicago. So that's going to be real interesting to see how that one plays out. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Jack Jablonski will join us, and we'll talk to the chief, David Alcaro. You can check him out at thechiefsports.com. Talk to him about what's going on. He goes to he covers the Rangers games. And I want to ask him about that American Faro thing, too. He's on top of horse racing. We'll be right back with Jack and the Chief. Chief's going to share that music today. Could be Jack's theme song, too. We're joined by the original Chief, David Alcaro. Check him out at thechiefsports.com, and it's presented by Liquid Ice Energy Drink, and also another Chief, Jack Jablonski. Now, Chief, I don't think you've been on when we've had Jack on before.
No, I don't believe so. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you? Now, Jack has been on with us when he was still in high school. He basically did a hockey report it was Wednesday, right?
Yep, every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday night, and when he went to Southern Cal this year, and he was with us. Every Tuesday, because he and you have something very much in common. You're both hockey aficionados, and we were talking in the last break. What is with Lundqvist and the Rangers?
It's a great question. I don't know if it's so much on Henrik Lundqvist. It's just been the last two games have just been wide open, and that does not suit the Rangers, the wide open play. The Tampa Bay Lightning have just a lot more skill, a lot more talent. A lot of breakaways have been allowed, a lot of two-on-ones, and the Tampa Bay Lightning power play has been lethal.
You know, the thing about Tampa Bay, I mean, people don't maybe follow, Jack would and you would, follow them as closely as the other teams, but they've got players that are, I mean, a couple of 21-year-old stars, and Tyler Johnson's phenomenal, and what's he, only 24?
Yeah, they do have, they don't have a lot of household names outside of Steven Stamkos, but there's been just so much more scoring other than him. That triplet line with Tyler Johnson and Palat, they've just been devastating. The two Russians, Kucherov and Nesterov, especially Kucherov with the game winner last night. So yeah, they have a bunch of players that aren't household names for NHL fans, but are extremely talented and are doing the Rangers. And the Rangers stars aren't getting it done. Martin Saint-Louis, no goals, and Rick Nash just two.
Now, I'll ask both of you, both you, Chief, and Jack. Now, it's 2-1 Tampa Bay and 1-1 Anaheim and Chicago. What will the Stanley Cup be? Jack, what do you think?
Well, I think up to this point, seeing what we've viewed in the last two games for Anaheim and Chicago, is that it's just a matter of time before Perry and Getzlaf get going. Getzlaf has been not invisible, but he has not been a factor yet. And I think as we go deeper into series, which I see this being, you know, 6-7 game series, I think it's just a matter of time before Anaheim gets going, and the physicality that they play with the amount of skill is just going to overcome Chicago. At the same time, looking at it, you know, Lundqvist doesn't look like himself, and the depth of New York's defense has been exposed tremendously in this series with the speed and the triplet line and Stamkos. Bishop's played well. You know, he was up and down in the Red Wings series to start the playoffs, and he's really turned it on in the last two series, and I see an Anaheim-Tampa Bay final.
Oh boy, the NHL is crying right now hearing that. They're obviously hoping for they can't lose with New York and Chicago or New York and Anaheim, but I'm going the other way. I'm going to stick with New York and Chicago, New York, yeah, they're going to have to obviously tighten up their game. They can't have as many penalties. And on the other side, you just stick to Chicago that they just seem to just get it done. They have the experience, and I love their top players in Kane and Taves, and their defensive players, Keith and Seabrook, are just superstars. I know they played about 55 minutes the other night, but I think they'll bounce back. I like Chicago, but in New York is a much tougher one.
Well, actually, I kind of like the fact that both of you are disagreeing. That's why they're such good teams. Jack, tell him how what a fool he is.
Well, no, Chief, I want to wonder, what's your opinion on, you mentioned how, you know, it went into triple overtime, and defensively for Chicago, that, you know, they practically played 4D the whole game. Do you see that being a factor as we get into, you know, game four, game five, game six with Keith and Seabrook and Hjalmarsson racking up the minutes?
I feel like they've done this, though, every year. You know, it seems like these guys seem to do it every year, and that it doesn't seem to wear them down. They go deep in the playoffs every year. I don't think so, because, you know, obviously Anaheim, yeah, they're a little deeper. They go six deep with defense. I don't think it will be. The thing is, if either one of us are right or wrong, I don't think you can really take any pride in that. If you picked one of those teams in game two, I mean, could you really say, oh, you're such an idiot, you picked Chicago, you picked Anaheim? You know, those teams could have won the game 10 times each. You know, the difference is just razor thin.
No, I agree with that, and I think that, you know, year in and year out with Chicago and the defense, it's always a question when they roll Keith, you know, over half the game like Suter. But, you know, coming from Minnesota, what do you see is the difference between Duncan Keith and Ryan Suter? You know, they both play the minutes, but why is Chicago in and out just able to succeed?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. That's a little bit beyond me. I mean, I don't get to see Ryan Suter play that much. I don't know. Doug Keith does seem to have that magic, and he does. We've seen that, unfortunately, with Team Canada and, you know, Ryan Suter on Team USA. So, yeah, I don't really know what, you know, I don't watch enough of Ryan Suter to really answer that.
Now, Chief, let me ask you this about American Pharoah, obviously, going for the Triple Crown. You'll be at the Belmont Stakes?
Absolutely. Monday, you know, first thing I did, called over there, got my table set up, because unfortunately it's also the UEFA Champions League final, which is a game I'm really excited about. It's the same time. I'm not sure I'm going to work that out, but I would not miss a chance at a Triple Crown.
Now, what is this about the owner, Ahmed Zayed? I mean, it's a typical Jersey business where now he's being sued, and he's by a guy for $1.65 million who claims he owes him money for fronting him for offshore betting, and Zayed says it's a fraud, there's nothing to it. It's got to be a big story up in the New York area.
Yeah, it's definitely a story I read about this morning. I don't really, honestly know the details on it or what's going on. Luckily in this sport, it's less of an issue than it would be in any other sport. So if it is something that is, he's in trouble with, I mean, it'll put a slight little cloud over maybe the Zayed stable and the ownership, but it's not like another sport where any sort of gambling issue would be much, much worse. Gambling is as inbred, combined with horse racing as it gets. So I don't really know the details on this. I have a feeling it's probably nothing. It could be an extortion situation, but you just don't know.
I'll tell you one thing. If I were Bob Baffert or the Zayed stables, I'd be putting extra security around that horse.
Oh, yeah,
because
sure.
We've all seen movies, you know.
Yeah. Now, security will be tight anyway for other reasons, because, more because of performance-enhancing drug issues and any issue like that, or someone coming in and putting something into the horse to disqualify it in some way. So, the security is generally very, very tight out at the Belmont Stable. I think I would assume that the horse is out in California. I'm not sure what they did with it. Oh, no, they wouldn't have done that.
No, that would be too far of a travel.
They're either in Baltimore or in Maryland. I mean, in Maryland or New York or somewhere in between, I would think.
Yeah. I would think it'd make sense getting to Belmont as soon as possible so it's not a travel issue and you just start working them.
Yeah, generally, they have a good... Baffert will have a good relationship, and he'll get himself in a good barn there. I'm not sure exactly what the travel plans are. I haven't followed them closely.
Now, what do you think will happen? I mean, do you think he'll win the Triple Crown? I mean, it's been how many times? 13, 14 times?
Yeah.
Where somebody won the first two legs since affirmed one?
I feel like I've said there's a bunch of times I thought it would happen. I really think this horse has his good a chance as any. It's just such a hard feat. I haven't seen exactly who the contenders are going to be just yet, but yeah, Pletcher I think will bring back some horses. I'm really concerned about the horses that he'll have, and Nick Zito as well will have a horse or two. There'll be a few others, but they'll be fresh, they'll be ready to go for the distance. American Pharoah is a special horse. If we do get rain on the day, I think that will help. I think that's something that would favor American Pharoah, so maybe there's always a chance of that. So that would be something that would be pro-American Pharoah, any sort of storm. But it's such a difficult seat. I've seen it just not happen so many times, been disappointed walking out of there. I would bet against it, but this horse has the goods.
Well, and the one thing I wonder about, let's say he does win. He and the Preakness were not that great. Now, the Preakness, you could say, because it was all wet and muddy, although as you mentioned, maybe he's better that way. But if he doesn't have if he just has a pedestrian time and does win the Triple Crown, would that affect his breeding? I mean, if he doesn't have great times, will people be as excited about breeding to him just because he's a Triple Crown winner, or will they look at the numbers that he put up?
No, I think the fact that he won all three races will be good enough. And the breeding has already been sold, I believe, $20 million, which actually is maybe a little bit on the low side, because, again, it's before he's accomplished this. But they did sell the breeding to an undisclosed barn in an undisclosed country, so I don't know if it's even within the United States. But I don't think, it would definitely be a factor.
Well, has he been sold, or just breeding rights to him?
The breeding rights have been sold. No, the horse is still owned by Zayed, but the breeding rights have been sold.
And how long does that last?
I believe that's the entire
breeding career?
Reproductive life.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so.
You would think if they, you're taking the $20 million, it's a guarantee. You would think they'd want to wait on that and see if he did win, and then see how many people you can book for it.
Yeah, unless the thought is, if it wins, there's so much money in it already, you know, this is just a safe way of... This is also, the Ziad stable gone under a bankruptcy. So this is not necessarily the most financially stable stable. Sorry for that bad pun. But, yeah, it's so I think they could definitely take the Shore thing and the $20 million, and they'll be able to invest that in a lot of other horses, and I'm sure they have plans on growing it even bigger. Ziad is a very ambitious horse owner.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Chief, always great talking to you. The Chief, David Alcaro. You can check him out on thechiefsports.com. And he's presented by Liquid Ice Energy Drink. Chief, we'll be talking again. We'll chat again next week. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
All right, we'll be back. Helmsy, by the way, Hellboy, from David Helmer to Hellboy to Helmsy. We go back and forth between Hellboy and Helmsy, sort of his baseball name. It was started by, well, who gave it? Was it Al Newman or was it?
Gino.
Gene Larkin, Gino, went on the Gino basis, called him Helms, but baseball names got the IE at the end, so we're going with Helmsy. We're going to take a quick break. Helmsy, Jabs, and me will be back. Do a little threesome. You can join in too, 651-989-9105. As a matter of fact, if you would like, we still have tickets to that beer fest this weekend, right? And we have some tickets to the Mopar 31st Annual Car Show. So you could call if you want either one of those. Just give us a call, 651-989-9105. You don't have to go on the air. We may put you on, but you don't have to come on if you don't want. But we want to make sure you get those tickets if you'd like them. Be right back with a little threesome.
Three, oh, it's the magic number. Yeah, it is. The magic number. Somewhere in that ancient mystic trinity, you'll get three.
Yeah, you'll get the three. We're back, three of us in here, Helmsy, Jack Jablonski, and me. Got a little threesome, three questions. Do you know if any questions have to do with Calipari? Because if not, we got to talk about that.
No, they don't. So we should cruise through them and just get
Let's get through the questions and we'll talk about Calipari. He said something incredible.
Hey, it's Gollum from Little Earth.
Yo, go.
I have three questions for you. Yeah. Number one, Joe Mauer famously hit his first home run last night. If he stays healthy, how many more could he hit this year?
I think he's on pace for four home runs. Is it that many? May not be that many. Wait a minute. How many games have they played?
It's got to be close to that.
They have played...
It's about a quarter of the way through the year.
40 games, right? Well, that's about dead on. He's on pace for four home runs. But he's also on pace for close to 100 ribbies, too. Although,
has he hit 100 ribbies in his career? Because I know early on he was red hot.
He may, you know what, the year he won the MVP.
He's always, season, I think he hit 96.
Actually has.
Wow.
But he, that MVP season he had was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And we could find that for you quickly. I don't think he has gotten to 100 either, but we'll take a quick look here.
But how does he not hit more? Just the way he turned on that pitch last night when originally he even said it in the opening clip that I played. He was trying to take it the other way at first, then he snapped the bat around. Pulled it to right center field. Why doesn't he do that more?
He hits for average. You know, you've got, as a three hitter, depending on the team, obviously, you have to look at what the team wants out of you and where you're in the lineup. But for two guys that, you know, are a little more powerful than the average, with Dozier leading off, who's got quite a few home runs this year, you know, you got to look at a guy that can drive in runs and take it the other way at a three hole, opposed to, you know, with Miggy. You know, he has the capability to take it out whenever. You know, Joe may not have the capability to take it out whenever, but, you know, it's pick and choose between, you know, hitting for average or going for home runs and batting 250.
You know what, though? I mean, he's big enough. He is a strapping lad. It shouldn't be an issue.
It really shouldn't, and I don't know where it comes from, but, you know, with the swing and whatever it is, you've got to look at Joe as at this point in his career, and with his knees and everything, I wouldn't expect more than 10 home runs out of him the rest of his career.
Well, I mean, if he were to get to the four home runs, which is he's on pace for, he would be matching last year's numbers. So, you know, that's
it's a start.
And again, he's a favorite son of Minnesota, but for a corner guy, he's got to get them. It doesn't work unless he actually does get them. More than 100 ribbies.
Well, if he only ties his mark of four last season, we can say at least one thing. He's What's not that? Getting worse.
See, you're always putting the positive spin on things. So you got to like that. Yeah, he's not quite getting worse. See, that's a good spin, right? No, he's a lot better than, I think he's certainly doing a lot better than he
than he did last year. And
well, I think a lot of the credit has to go to Paul Molitor as well and the Twins organization with being able to turn this program around. You know, you've had three 90-something losing seasons in a row.
Four,
excuse me. Well, it's the first time since 2010 they've been six games over 500.
Yes.
And for Paul Molitor to take over the team, and, you know, Gardy didn't have a lot of help in those 4 years, but for the team to give Maurer more support, you know, behind him and in front of him in the lineup, you know, you've got to put Molitor in that manager of the year category already, even though we're a quarter through the season.
I'll tell you what, they get stay on the pace they're on and get over 90 wins. He should
be the
manager of the year. It was the best year he did have was his in 09, his MVP year. 28 home runs, 96 ribbies, 365 batting average.
365.
My gosh. And he has had, 2012, he had 85. He's had 85 twice, and he had 84. In 06, but as for home runs, I mean, him being in double digits, except for the 28, the most he had other than that was in 06 with 13. So he's never been nor been expected to be a home run hitter, but he has to come through with the ribbies.
Well, he really has to do one or the other. He's got to hit above 300 or he's got to put up 20 home runs in the three hole for a successful team.
Yeah, but if you're knocking him in, it doesn't have to be a home run. Just get guys
exactly.
across the plate.
I would totally agree with that.
Like those bases clearing singles that he gets.
Yeah, those will work.
Just add one of those. Those are amazing.
Ground ball to the shortstop.
Nothing wrong with a base.
Clears the bases.
Bases clearing single is fine. Then the next, Torrey's got to knock him in or ploof. All right, what's your other question there?
Number two. The Twins are now carrying 13 pitchers. How long do you expect they'll keep that money?
Well, if they're, I don't think, they just brought Stauffer up. They need to bring somebody else up, another position player.
But they sent down a position player because I think they used every single person in the bullpen last night.
Because they wore everybody out.
Yeah, so they're trying to bring up another arm for at least a couple of days. Like, how long do you think they'll stay at 13? Just until Arcia's back or something like that?
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to last. But they do have to get some of these guys, you know, a little bit of rest. It's part of the problem when you go to a National League city, you're going to be pitching guys more because you are a lot quicker to get guys out so they don't hit.
Yeah. Well, if you get Mike Pelfrey, he went two for two.
Yeah.
Well, you don't need to pinch hit.
Yeah, it's about the best contribution. All right, what else you got?
And finally, Mike Babcock signed a $50 million contract to coach the Maple Leafs. Should a good coach get paid as much as a good player?
Tell you what, make a lot more here than the NHL than you do in Middle Earth. You know what? I've always felt that the coaches and managers should be making it. They never will, not as an average, but should be making the big bucks, too. It's tough when you're making less than the guys that are working for you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to go with the talent. You know, you've got guys that have an extreme talent of scoring goals and making plays and, you know, being in the physically fit condition that they are for athletes and for managers and Mike Babcock, for instance. Every once in a while, I think you've got that outlier that really deserves it, like Babcock, you know, coaching 10 seasons for the Red Wings with the pressure in Detroit and making the playoffs and winning a Stanley Cup. You know, it's a well-deserved contract. Overall, I wouldn't say they deserve as much money as a player because of what the player has to do. I mean, for Babcock, it's the decision-making, and as much as it is for players on the ice at the same time, there's a lot that goes with actually doing the work opposed to just watching the
play. All right, let me ask you this, Jack. Where do you rank him of the best coaches in the NHL today?
That's a good question. I personally have him in the top three right now. I think that consistently with the teams that he puts out on the ice in Detroit and the injuries that he's dealt with, Datsyuk played 50 games, Zetterberg was out with some concussion issues and has been out in the past, and to keep funneling guys out of Europe and turning Filppula, as he's on Tampa Bay right now, into a star player, you know, what he's been able to do and the organization he's been able to run, I see him, you know, up there with, you know, possibly Boudreaux and Coach Q.
Now, you know him, right?
Yes, I've met him, and I've had a few conversations. His daughters have sent me some stuff when I was in the hospital, and he's a great guy, and it's a you know, well-deserved contract.
Well, that's what you like to hear, that is he's not going to some jerk.
Yeah, no, he's, you know, one of the nicest guys ever, and he's, you know, very caring for his players and people around the business and inside and out of the locker room. And for a guy that has worked this hard for a contract, it's well-deserved.
Not bad money. Now, we mentioned John Calipari. It's incredible what he said the other day. He's doing he was at a leadership convention at Rupp Arena, and he's a Kentucky coach, John Calipari. He made a comment saying that the primary goal this season wasn't to win a national title, it's to put guys into the NBA draft. He said it all starts with players first. Their dreams become our dreams. Last year we started the season with a goal. You may think that goal is to win the national title. Win all the games. It was to get 8 players drafted. Well, how can you be about your team if you're worried about players getting drafted? Well, we kind of work it the other way. What are your dreams? What are you looking for? What are you trying to get out of life? How can we help you with that? So he throws that pitch at these kids. Well, he wants to get in the NBA. Meanwhile, he still has a shot at winning the national title. I don't know if he would have said that had they won the national title. He might have to try to minimize, hey, you know, titles are great, but we just want to put young men in the NBA.
Just get to the next level.
We don't want to get them we don't want to get them a degree.
No.
We don't want to help them get an education. We just want to get them in the NBA. By the way, 26 Kentucky players have gone to the NBA in the last 6 years. It just, you know, dwarfs what other teams have done. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, we will be joined by Twins legend Ken Herbeck. We'll talk to him about the Twins. Also talk to him about what his appearance. The Letterman show is over now, ended last night. Talked about when he was on a Letterman show. That was more than a couple of years ago, right after the Twins won their first World Series in 87. Neither one of you lads were around back then. Were you?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 3.
You were 3? Well, I know Jack wasn't around yet.
It's a few years before 80, my time.
Yeah, we'd have to get into the... what year were you born?
95.
That's not so long ago. 95?
Yeah.
Well, you're 19 now then, right?
Or yep, 19.
When do you turn 20? In the fall?
October, yeah.
Okay, you still got a little bit of time for that. My God, I remember when you went to the casino for the first time. You were just a kid. All right, we're going to take a quick break, be joined by Ken Herbeck.
The Saturday Night 5, The Ticket.
In the 6th game of the World Series, just last week, I guess, Saturday, my first guest came to bat with the bases loaded, and he did this. He knocked one out. Folks, please say hello to the first baseman of the world champion Minnesota Twins, World Series hero Kent Herbeck.
You were born right there in the neighborhood, weren't you?
Yeah. Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Minneapolis. Okay. Well, Bloomington. Born in Minneapolis, raised in Bloomington.
And is there a difference between folks from Minneapolis to St. Paul?
Jeez, I knew I was going to get grilled. I can't say nothing bad because both Minneapolis and St. Paul are great cities.
We are joined now by one of those people talking, not David Letterman, Ken Herbeck. Ken, does it seem like it was almost 30 years ago you did that interview?
Don't remind me.
That was well, obviously 87. We're talking 27 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. It definitely seems... especially if I go to the ballpark and walk around the ballpark and see all the great mementos they have from back in those championship days, it doesn't seem that long ago until you got to walk up the stairs someplace. Then you know what's happening.
Hey, Ken, you know who Jack Jablonski is? He's with us here today too in studio.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention he was here and David Helmer, our producer. But when you look, by the way, you cut quite a dashing figure in your youth. Back in 87.
Dashing figure.
Yeah, you had the nice sweater on. You looked good.
Yeah, well, I don't look good now or what?
Let's just say you looked good. No, you look good now. you look great.
I was a handsome young man back then.
You're a handsome, older man now. Young was the operative.
Exactly.
Now, I talked to you earlier today. How did you do? Because you were out fishing.
We did all right. It was out, what better way to spend your birthday than sitting in a boat and fishing and having a good time and with friends and going out for dinner tonight with friends and family. What could be better on a beautiful day like today?
Now, Ken, I have to apologize because I did not realize until just now, yes, May 21st, 1960, it is your birthday.
Yes, it is.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
well, thanks
that.
For taking...
My card's probably in the mail, I know.
No, and you know what? Well, we've got a cake here for you, too, if you want to come and get it. Go get
you
a cake.
No problem.
He'll come right over. back-to-back day. Well, it was the day before yesterday. I told you earlier I talked to Bud. Bud's birthday was yesterday. He turned – you actually both, in an odd little twist – you're 55, he was 88, so you got the number matchup. But you also told me, don't expect another 30, 40 years of garage sale at your place. like Bud did.
You know what? I could have a garage sale and do just what Bud did, because I got a mess of memorabilia around here, but I'm going to hang on to it for a while yet. Maybe somewhere down there, if I even make 88.
Oh, you're a given.
I'm hoping for 56 now.
That sounds like Butt. He said that too. He was asked if he'd have another one next year, another garage sale. I don't even know if I'll be here next year.
Bud's a beauty, though. He's a great man, and
yeah, he is.
You know, spent some time hunting with Bud, what a character. He is quite the man.
Well, you two guys must have a great, because you both of you love to hunt, both of you love to fish. There's quite a bit in common there.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. And as you know, I wasn't afraid to go out fishing on certain days. Actually, you know, game six of that World Series, the next morning, game seven, I went duck hunting. And I know Bud used to cancel practices or start practices late because he was sitting in a duck blind someplace. So, yeah, there's a little bit of blood that flows between Bud and I that is pretty close.
Ken, I'm thinking that it has to do with his longevity and your longevity coming up, too, because you guys have a pretty relaxed retirement, let's put it that way, or life.
Yeah, you know, I enjoy life. I enjoy friends and family. I enjoyed my life as a baseball player and now as a fan, I'm trying to do it the right way, and hopefully I've got a bunch more. Hopefully, like I say, I can make that 8-8 that Bud just made.
Well, now you mentioned about, you know, enjoying it. You've got to enjoy what's happening with the Twins and with Molitor.
Ooh, it's been fun. I haven't had to answer all the questions from buddies and friends and family. What the heck's wrong with the team? It's all, holy smokers, can you believe how they're doing? It's been fun to watch. You know, they're making the right plays, and you know, last night was a perfect example of, you know, a guy struggling for you and Mauer a little bit with the power thing, and he comes up and hits a home run for you in a time, and you know, that's the kind of things you need, that different, you know, different guys stepping up and doing something in different games. And you know, last night Joe decided to hit a home run to win the ball game for him. So you know, little things like that in the long run really help out. You know, when you got a marathon that you run here for the baseball season.
Ken, how much time have you spent talking to Mauer about playing first? Have you worked with him much at all?
No. You know what? I haven't just talked a little bit about him. You know, Joe's a great athlete. There's no doubt about that. And you know, you could put him any place. I don't care if you put him out at shortstop or center field or wherever. Even put him on the mound, he could probably pitch for you. You know, he's a fantastic athlete. You know, he had the best help ever in spring training with TK helping him over at first base.
Yep.
So, you know, we've chatted a little bit about different things to do over there, but not a lot. I don't try to bug those guys. You know, if they want to come up and ask me questions, I'll definitely, you know, try to help them and answer them that way. But I won't go in and try to – I'm not a coach. I'm more of a guy that shows up down there. And if they, you know, want to ask me a question, great, but I'm not going to go down there and tell them what to do because I know how tough it is. And I guess the only thing I ever really say to him is, hey, you know, it's a long road here. You got to keep battling, and hopefully things will come good as time goes.
You know what's interesting about that? Because I've run into a lot of players that they don't want to be invasive to the player on the field, the guys that have retired. And the players on the field don't want to come to you because they don't want to bother you. So a lot of things don't get done.
Well, you know what, though? Sometimes guys are afraid. I know when I was playing and a Rod Carew or a Tony Oliva, well, Tony was our coach a lot, but Carew would come in the clubhouse or Killebrew or Frank Quillacy or whatever. And I loved it when those guys were around. I mean, well, you know, it might be a little different for me being those guys were guys I grew up watching as a kid and idolized and stuff like that. But I've got nothing but good things to say about this club, even when they were struggling the last 4 years. It's not like they're giving up. The guys play hard, and I'm not there to poke, you know, bad at anybody out there. I know how tough it is at sometimes and how lucky you have to be at different, you know, situations. It does nothing but do me good to go down there and say hi to the guys and keep connected with the Twins.
And it's the one thing that seems to be a good change is having Torrey Hunter back, because it seems like on the field and off he's made a difference with these guys.
Oh, yeah, you know, tremendously. I know I was in the clubhouse here a couple Sundays ago, and they were playing some serious rap or hip-hop or something going on in the clubhouse, and I said, what is this crap going on in here? Torrey was dancing around the corner, and so was Dozier. And I looked at Dozier, and I said, Doze, this isn't your kind of music. He said, it is now, because Torrey's liking it. So, you know, if you go in Dozier's truck right now and turn the radio on, there'd be country music. But he was you know, going along with Torrey and having a good time, and the atmosphere was, well, you know, the atmosphere is always better when you win, and everybody knows that, but, no, Torrey has definitely, you know, stepped that up a little bit and made things fun around the clubhouse, which definitely helps.
Yeah, it's working. Now, we played that little clip before, you know, with Letterman. What does stand out from that? I mean, I know Jamie Gertz was on that night. Did you spend any time talking to her in the green room, or did you get to enjoy the night?
You know what? It went by so fast. I was actually second fiddle that night. Frankie Boyola, they had asked first, I guess, to come on. And he couldn't make it, even being from out east, he couldn't make it. And then they said if I would come out, so the wife and I quick flew out there. But you know, I always tell everybody, one of the most memorable people I've ever met in my life that had an aura was Tom Jones walked down the hall when I was there.
Is that right?
And I walked alongside of him. I think we were actually going from the green room to get ready to the stage to get on, you know, go on and see.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk at all or nothing, but we walked by and he had about an entourage of six or seven people walking down the hall with him. And he had an aura I've never felt with anybody before.
Really?
I'm just smelling his cologne that he had on. But it was just like, that was Tom Jones.
And your entourage was Jeannie, right? Your wife?
Yeah. I'm dragging my wife along with me. Yeah.
That's neat.
But that was what I remember about the night. And of course it went so fast, No, it was a fun thing, and it's fun to look back on, and I've been catching enough crap about the sweater I wore that night, too.
I thought it looked great.
I want to give Molly a little crap about the red sport coat he had on. I wonder where that is now.
Do you still have the sweater?
No. The sweater has been made into, I don't know, mittens now, I suppose.
All right. Hey, Kent, thanks so much for joining us, and have a great birthday tonight when you go out with your family and friends. Thank you again.
I appreciate that. Hey, Jack, good luck to you, bud.
Hey, thanks, Kent. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.
All right, take it easy. All right, thanks a lot. Take care, Kent. Ken Herbeck. Always great talking to Kent. He's a lot of fun to talk to. And I apologize. I mean, because I'd forgotten it was his birthday. So I'm sure he'll have a great night tonight. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, talk to Saints Executive VP Tom Whaley. Got their first game tonight. We will talk to Tom Whaley when we get back. Jack will be with us yet. Helmsy, we never got to talk. See, I should have asked him about that. The Helmsy, he would have jumped right on that. All right. Thanks again to Ken Herbeck. We'll take a quick break. Come right back. Well, we have to assume the Twins certainly knew about that.
Right? Something to do?
Well, they knew that he was not going to be available. They just didn't share that with anyone, that Santana wouldn't be available for the postseason.
I saw there was something that if he appealed, they could have gotten that part overturned. But he didn't appeal the suspension at all.
It doesn't make any sense, because last year, wasn't Chris Davis?
No, they changed it after last season. Of the 2014, because guys did go into the postseason.
Like Nelson Cruz and Chris Davis from Baltimore.
Well, and that's
both of them played in the postseason.
That's the other thing. You're right. Why not have appealed just to get that?
Yeah. Just on the off chance, even at that point when you don't think you're going to make the postseason, just appeal and try and get that part overturned just in case.
But again,
Ruben Santana.
He's been watching this team for the last 4 years. He's probably thinking, they don't have me for 80 games. They got no shot. They're going for another 100-loss season. They'll be chasing that one. And now it looks like, about that, though, the fact that we're even talking about it is amazing with this Twins team, that they could possibly go into the postseason.
Makes me feel good inside.
And if it ended now, they'd be in the postseason, right?
Yeah.
That's not too shabby.
Are they all the way up to the first wild card?
No. No, because Detroit, I think, right now has a better record. Kansas City is leading the division, and then you got Detroit. Now we, David Helmer, Helmsy Hellboy, Jack Jablonski with us. Tom Whaley, we're hoping to get him momentarily. Got a lot going on over the new CHS field, though. You know, got to take care of the game, first game tonight. They're going to make sure the pig is taken care of, Pablo Pig Osso. I want to talk to Tom about that, see what the other options were. There had to be something better than Pig Osso. You know, we talked to Ken Herbeck. His birthday today is 55. He did have some darn good seasons. His best one, well, I mean, from a home run standpoint, was 87 when they won their first World Series. 34 home runs. And I don't want to waste his time repeating numbers he knew. 34 home runs, 90 RBI, and a career-tying high, 5 stolen bases. batted 285. His best year as a was actually in 84. 27 home runs, 107 ribbies, 311 batting average, and had the most votes for the MVP of a position player. Willie Hernandez kicked ass that year and was the MVP as a pitcher. Do either one of you have an issue with pitchers being MVP? I don't.
I don't. I think, you know, Verlander did it, you know, 3-4 years ago, and hey, if you're the most valuable player on your team, and it's well deserved.
Some people argue, well, Cy Young, but you know
and
what?
Part of me wants to say that same thing. They have their own award for technically most valuable pitcher, but sometimes a pitcher is the most important guy on a team.
It transcends it.
Yeah.
And there was a year that, this is, I don't know how many years, 5 years or more ago, when Pedro Martinez wound, it was, had to be more than 5 years ago because he was, you have to be 5 years out to
he
be eligible.
He retired five yeah. plus years ago.
Yeah, what it was, would it have to be more than that? But I think it was Pedro who, he was kept from winning the MVP by a couple of votes, one of them by a local voter here and another guy from somewhere else, because they, I think they left him off their ballot entirely. And that'll crush you because they believed that pitchers should not be eligible. But my only thing with that is if they're eligible, I don't think you should ignore them. You shouldn't pass your own. And that's why, because people wonder why I vote for some of these steroid guys for the Hall of Fame. Because I have voted for Clemens and I have voted for Bonds. Because if baseball is going to make them eligible, then I'm going to decide to base it on the merits of what they did on the field. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, now, Jack, we had a guy named John Pessa on with us, and John wrote a book called The Game. It basically the last 20 years behind the scenes in baseball. He wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal recently this week saying A-Rod belongs in the Hall of Fame. And what he used as an example is the number of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that may not have taken steroids, but back in the, you know, you're talking the 70s, 80s, amphetamines were huge, 60s, 70s, 80s. A lot of these guys, and some of them are well-known Hall of Famers, they took amphetamines to go from day to day because they needed to be, you know, they needed to be
at their best.
Yeah, at their best and
physically.
Awake.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, you find yourself, you know, wondering, should someone who cheated the game belong in the Hall of Fame? And personally, like you said, I think if he's on the ballot, you know, if they decide that, you know, he's, you know, eligible for the Hall of Fame, whether there's an asterisk or not next to their name, if he's on the ballot, I have to vote for him. You know, Bonds and A-Rod. I would agree. I think that it's tough.